Here we have a radio interview with the Child of Rage star, Beth Thomas, at age 32.
For tonight, we have Beth Thomas. Beth Thomas is in a remarkable story. She is here tonight to share with us her experience that she had occurred when she was in her childhood, where she suffered from a reactive attachment disorder.
Reactive attachment disorder. It's a DSM or psychiatric diagnosis. DSM diagnoses are based on clusters of behaviours, yet it does not describe the etiologies or what causes those behaviours. It's attachment theory which has the evidence-based research which describes the etiologies of these behaviours or what causes these behaviours. So if you want to understand what causes the behaviours which are included in the diagnosis of RAD, you need to study attachment theory. So just keep in mind that RAD is very limited in its scope in addressing attachment related issues. It doesn't encompass all of the problems which Beth exhibited, yet a few of the behaviours she displayed allow her to be classed as having had RAD. There should be a card on screen with a link to an article describing attachment theory.
Her story is so remarkable and amazing, and the outcome of overcoming her psychological ailments is just profound, and we love to have her here, and thank you for being with me on the People Speak tonight. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much for having me on, Sophia. I appreciate it.
No problem. You know, there's a lot going on in the world today. If we take a look around, I mean, there's so much psychological ailments right now, especially with what's happening out in Baltimore. It's so unfortunate. But before we can get into any of that, let's talk about you. And can you explain to us this disorder that you had overcame as a child and the impact it has on your life at the moment?
Sure. So what I was diagnosed with was reactive attachment disorder. And what reactive attachment disorder is, I'll kind of just briefly touch on some of the causes and the signs and symptoms. So it occurs in the first 3 years of life. And usually with the causes, they range from abuse, neglect, trauma, separation and loss, in utero trauma, such as drugs and alcohol abuse, ongoing pain, such as if a child is separated, like from their family, in that first few years of life and have to be hospitalized for an extended period of time, repeated moves, such as foster care and being placed into different, homes. And with me, what occurred is I was born into a very abusive, home and environment, and then my birth mother died when I was 18 months old of kidney disease. So during that time, she was gone so much, going into the hospital and dialysis. And I had, at that time, I had 6 other siblings. And then shortly after I was born, about a year after I was born, my little brother was born. So there were quite a few children in this home, and it was a very abusive environment, sadly, from my birth father. And then my birth mother died. So therefore, I had that separation and loss, the abuse, that neglect.
I just want to highlight here the 3 complicating factors which underlie her most severe condition as a child. Beth has just succinctly mentioned them herself, but in a very informal way. It's clear to see that Beth understands these terms intimately, and that she's been around such definitions for a long time that perhaps she's assuming too much, that the general listener will know exactly what she means and the importance of what she's just said. First is the maternal deprivation when her mother died when she was 1 year old. That's the most severe form of maternal deprivation. Second is the neglect she received all day at the hands of her father while he had sole custody of her. Third is the grossly inappropriate sensorial treatment by her father. So at the point when she was being neglected all day, she was becoming fearful of her primary caregiver at night.
And then what happened is it all kind of comes to, there's that first year cycle of life that when a child has a need, when a baby has a need, they cry. And that cry, if it's not taken care of right away, becomes rage because they're so helpless and hopeless because they cannot care for themselves. And so therefore, when that need is met and they get adequate gratification, then they learn to trust that caregiver, that provider, and establish a bond. And what happened is when I would have that need, that gratification didn't come. And therefore, that trust was not established. And just to kind of talk about the symptoms of attachment disorder, it's important that, you know, when a child is being diagnosed with attachment disorder, obviously that there's a clinician on board that is familiar with it for sure. But they usually would, they say, you know, the symptoms, they should have at least half or more of those symptoms. One of the biggest symptoms is superficially engaging and charming. They are one person at home with their family, and they are someone completely different with someone else if they recognize that they can con and manipulate that person that maybe has just walked into the room or their life. They could be seething anger, rage, and pain at their mom because that pain is directed towards the maternal being, and they can turn it off and turn it back on in a heartbeat. Because they attachment disorder, it's an inability to give and receive affection. And they are indiscriminately affectionate. They have extreme control problems. I had extreme control problems, extremely sneaky, destructive to self and others. I was very abusive to my younger brother. We were adopted together, and I very quickly, at 18 months, was already acting out on him and on my my adoptive family at the time. Cruelty to animals is another one that's big on that. There are no impulse controls, chronic crazy lying, lack of conscience is huge on that. Persistent nonsense questions and chatter because they're trying to control the situation, they don't feel safe in the environment because the last environment they might have been in was an abusive and scary one. So they set their control, they control the situation so as to feel safe, that no one can hurt them again because they've already been hurt when they let their guard down.
For those of you thinking, these things she's talking about now aren't covered in the condition of RAD, well, some of them aren't, and that's true, yet, as already explained, RAD is a DSM diagnosis and very limited in its scope. Beth here is talking about the wider attachment theory research and her personal experience of being around very disturbed children and helping them.
So there's a lot that's in regards to attachment disorder and how it obviously was reflected in me. And then how it affects who I am now and what I do is after I healed from attachment disorder and going through intensive therapy to heal from that, I teach now about attachment disorder and how it was manifested in my life and how I healed and how others can heal too. And my goal is that there is hope provided in that. I became a nurse and I work in the neonatal ICU, and I'm also a neonatal flight nurse, and I love what I do. And my goal with that is to try to break that cycle that so many can get caught up in, that teenage mom that comes in that has been in a life of abuse and then has this child, and to be able to help her recognize that she doesn't have to repeat that cycle that maybe she came from, that she can actually learn to connect and bond with her little child, with her baby, with whether it's premature or term, that she can actually learn to connect and rebuild that broken bond.
That's extremely a lot. Like, when you think about it, it's kind of overwhelming, the amount you over. Most people don't believe that you can triumph over a recovery like this, but catching it at such a young, early age, is that the key to your healing? And how long are you still going through a healing process? Is this a lifetime learning? What's the percentage rate that children actually overcome this? Because the awareness of this is important, because I believe that a lot of our social structures and stuff, a lot of the elements of the violence and such that we see worldwide may have a lot to do with attachment disorders. I hope I'm making any sense here. So.
Yes, no, I strongly agree, Sophia. I do. I wish I could tell you the percentage of those that have overcome. I don't have a number. I know that it's definitely difficult in regards to overcoming. I think the biggest thing is that, yes, I was younger when I went through my healing process. And I do feel like that somewhat helped, because I was a little bit younger. But as my mom always says, if you're breathing, there's hope. It's as an adult dealing with someone that would be dealing with attachment disorder, in order for them to heal, the biggest thing is they have to recognize that there's even a problem, and then recognize that they want to heal. And that, I think, is very difficult for many adults to do, and to accept that there is a problem, and that's not something that is easy to be done. In regards to attachment disorder, when I healed, and I went through through therapy during, intensive therapy during, I was 6 to 8 years old. And then there was a time that I started to heal, and I could recognize that change, recognize that I had empathy and that I didn't want to disappoint. Was the documentary Child of Rage, I know that you had watched that. Mm-hmm. And in regards to that, it's interesting. You can see in the beginning of that documentary, I have no empathy and no feeling regarding the things that I had done and the pain that I had caused and the emotions that the words that I was speaking. If you listened and you watch it, you notice that there's no feeling or emotion behind some of the terrible things that I am saying. And one thing that about that that's important to recognize and to see is that that's hallmark, that there was no empathy there. But as I heal, as Child of Rage shows the healing process, then you start to see me, and as I have that empathy, as I start to recognize the pain that I had caused. And that was a big part in turning the corner. And when I was a little bit older, after that healing process, I was actually placed in a group home and a foster home for an amount of time.
I feel Beth is underplaying what happened here. Perhaps in order to save the feelings of her original adopting parents, the minister and his wife. Maybe it's because she doesn't want them to feel like she's blaming them. Nevertheless, they showed up at Nancy's ranch one weekend where Beth was clearly healing and took her away and ultimately placed her in a home. A group home for bad children who need adopting. And they wouldn't let Nancy know where the home was. So Beth was ripped away from her new primary caregiver and placed in a group home full of strangers. It took Nancy over a year to find the location of the home, and when she did, she immediately went to Beth and asked her if she could adopt her. Now, that did eventually happen, but it took another year or so. In this time between where Beth was taken away from Nancy all of a sudden and their reunion, her condition got worse. Understandably, she had formed a strong and intimate relationship with Nancy and felt secure and safe, and that she had a person who really loved her. And then, without Beth understanding why, she was completely removed from Nancy and her family. She didn't know whose decision it was to have her placed in a group home full of strangers, and that created a lot of doubt and stress for Beth, which ultimately led to the resurfacing of some of the behaviors she had had before.
And while I was in the group home during that time, there were times that I could be selfish or manipulative. But as I was able to get back into my family, that helped me to heal in the long run, then I was able to feel safe. And like, I didn't have to be in control. And because I was placed back into my mom's home and had that consistency, I could relinquish that control because I was able to move forward. When I was 15, I did have some memories that came up in regards to abuse that had occurred to me, as well as reprocessing my childhood, but at a teenage level. And it was very difficult for me. And I became depressed, and I had some traumatic memories arise when I also started to date and realized that something was not right. And so I actually did EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, because it's very good with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And that was extremely helpful at that time in my life to help me kind of move past that. I think my teaching and watching Child of Rage, as often as I end up having to watch it because I show it before I teach, in its way has become very healing for me. The first time I ever spoke in front of an audience, I was 16 and I was terrified, Sophia. I was completely terrified to get up and just air everything and have no skeletons in the closet and completely be open and honest about who I was, how far I'd come, how hard I'd worked, and the pain and trauma that I had caused to family in my life and to my little brother. And I remember there was a family member, a mom, that came up to me after I spoke. And she said that my getting up there and sharing that story gave her hope that her child, who had attachment disorder, could someday heal and could make it. And that was just eye-opening for me, to be that age and to feel like I had made a difference, that the hell that I felt that I had gone through as a child had come full circle, and that my pain and trauma, but the overcoming, that overcoming that suffering, was able to help someone know that their child could do it too. And that was awe-inspiring to me.
Yeah, you know, especially when you're telling your story, and I'm thinking, you know, watching the documentary, and, you know, I did see the movie, I believe. Was it made by HBO?
No, the documentary was made by HBO. The movie was not. I feel like the movie might have been made by NBC, but I could be wrong about that. But very, oh my gosh, very eye-opening, that movie as well. Especially
with your actions, you know, wanting to kill and hurt. And, you know, those are strong actions, especially, you know, for children to have, because children normally don't behave and react in that way. And the just the behavior all around. And to talk to you now, it's like, did you really live like that? Because I don't hear it from you, but I do feel the healing process that you have taken on now. What about violence now in your life? How do you deal with it? How does it make you feel, especially with those childhood memories?
In regards to like a violent situation, or
yes, like in regards to, you know, because for instance, you used to try to almost like literally kill your little brother. Is that correct? And like attack him when he was sleeping, and attack him when there was no adults that were around. I'm not sure how close the movie or the movie was to your actions in real life, because I know movies can exaggerate.
The movie definitely took its own turn of some things. There were parts of the movie that were definitely, I guess you could say, Hollywoodized. Some things were not accurate for sure in the movie, but the idea, the concept behind it of trying to, I believe, bring an understanding to what I had gone through and was paramount. And I believe that was their desire, obviously, behind all that, but not all of it was accurate. The documentary, which is actually me, the HBO documentary, that definitely is all, you know, I mean, it's being a documentary that has more of the truth in it, or the truth and the full story basically behind it. But the movie, they definitely opened your eyes to the severity of the trauma that I had, and then kind of had their own little twist to it as well, for sure. But in regards to now and violent situations, I guess you could say, I don't place myself in violent situations. And I don't have, I guess it's kind of hard to answer that question. And I guess I'm trying to figure out what exactly you mean by
just
that. As like
the red, the thought, like, it doesn't make you uncomfortable. You know, of course you wouldn't put yourself into violence. For instance, let's look at media. When we usually watch the nightly news, we see a lot of violence there, a lot of war. If we look at the Baltimore riots currently happening as we speak, there's a lot of violence, you know, that's happening there. Does attachment disorder have any placement or any connections or relations to what's going on? So, you know, this attachment disorder might be more grander than we can actually really understand at many levels, because I believe that it's like an onion. We have it's peeling back all these layers, and it deals with attachment one way or another.
Correct. Very much so. And that inability to give and receive a affection, that inability to have empathy, that lack of conscience. I mean, some Ted Bundy, for example, had attachment disorder. If you go back and you look at his past and his childhood, he definitely has multiple causes and multiple signs and symptoms. Adolf Hitler was another one that definitely had attachment disorder. You look back at his Saddam Hussein, Helen Keller, actually, you look back at her history and her past, and how her, physical disability also somewhat exacerbated that, because there was an inability to help rebuild that connection. And that was very difficult. And now she is one of our greatest humanitarians, thankfully, because of that person, you know, I mean, by, Ann Sullivan coming into her life and being able to provide that consistency and helping to rebuild that broken bond that had been established. I agree with you. I definitely probably have more rad colored glasses, I guess you could say. When I see things, when I see a certain child maybe interact with their mother in a way, or I see things on TV and I see behaviors manifested, I definitely jump to the, oh, it's attachment disorder. But that's also just because that was where my life had mm-hmm. been. And so I think I have a little bit more of an eye for it, I would say. Does that mean they're all attachment disorder? No, it does not. Mm-hmm. But I do feel like that it's very important to recognize that someone that can go out and hurt somebody and have no remorse at all for what they're doing, that obviously is an individual that has been broken and does not know how to love and have empathy. And I do feel like we have a lot of that in our society, and you see that across the world. And as what's going on in Baltimore right now, it's devastating to me to see a world that has such potential for love to have such potential for hate too. That's very, it's heartbreaking to me.
It is heartbreaking. You know, the world actually needs a whole lot of healing right now, and it just seems like, you know, we're not placing our energy in the right direction to bring forth this healing. It just seems like a lot of unbalancement is going on. And this is a collective psychological problem, I believe, and humanity's just everybody is a part of it one way or another, even if they don't show any symptoms of anything.
Right.
It's really hard to be in a position, I would suppose, like yours, of dealing with something at so young of an age and kind of growing out through that and having that experience. A lot of people, we don't have that experience like you do. And I guess that's your success in your life right now, is because, as you said, you love what you do. And as far as I know, anything that we succeed at is because of the love we have.
Mm-hmm.
And you are, like you said, you're a nurse now, and you're in the healing profession, so you're born to heal. Do you feel that you know, this life of yours is it real?
It took a lot of hard work to get where I am today, for sure. I definitely had a tough beginning, a rough start for sure. And it was a long and bumpy road, but I feel like when you look at it, Sophia, we all have our pasts.
Mm-hmm.
Now, some of us have way more traumatic pasts than others, but we all have something that we feel like is a part of who we are, and it's there, depends on the severity of that. And even though we all have our pasts, what I've come to recognize is that it's not your past that defines you. It's mm-hmm. what you choose to do with your future that matters.
Absolutely. I want to take a break at this moment, Beth, and continue on when we come back after a word from our sponsors. Take it away into the break. Thank you. And we are back with Beth Thomas. We are taking any questions or calls that can be taken at 1-888-429-5471. I am your host, Sophia Ray, and we are on The People Speak. Beth, thank you so much. You have taken in a position now as an advocate. you're advocating for those who are in similar or if not the same situation that you were once in. I want to talk a little bit more, maybe getting on a social, going more towards a social outtake into this and into current events right now. How would this RAD, if I can call it that, have, do you see an effect of this RAD into any of our social structures? For instance, let's look at the event of 9/11. Mm-hmm. Do you believe that maybe that 9/11 was an inside job? And do you think that possibly that there could have been some disorder that may have led into that?
I feel like that with 9/11 and with something as traumatic as that is, for someone to be able to commandeer a plane and to want to hurt and kill and cause that much devastation, obviously they emotionally are not whole. I don't know what obviously the pasts of each of those people that did that came from, but does it make me think that there was an attachment issue? Yes, very much so. For them to have no empathy at all to do such damage and to kill someone all for their own gain, that is, I do feel like there definitely has to have been some sort of attachment disorder or attachment issues from their past that caused them to go the wrong way, for sure.
You think it's the lacking of emotion, that empathy, and it just seems like the world is being ran by psychopaths right now who just don't really care for anybody else, just as long as they have what they want or they think they need.
I think it's definitely eye-opening to see the world around us and recognize how far, what we need to do to help the world be a better place. Mm-hmm. I believe that there are definitely good among us that strive to help guide everyone there, for sure. And with attachment disorder, I definitely feel like that lack of conscience and that inability to give and receive affection, that lack of empathy causes someone to do damage in many ways and hurt in many ways. And I think it's important and it's beautiful to me when you see someone go out of their way to help someone or someone go out of their way to have compassion and to have that involved in their life and in what they're doing, I think is commendable.
I agree. No doubt. What about the violence that's going on in the police forces across the country? We see that there's a lot of excessive force. Do you think that's necessary? And just what is, in your opinion, what do you think is going on in that area?
In my opinion, I feel that the initial thought behind being a police officer was and is to protect and serve. And the same with military and the same with being a parent is to help guide your child and to protect them. And I feel that there are people in this world that either have attachment disorder or that have attachment issues that definitely hurt other people. And whether or not they're on the police force, whether or not they're your next door neighbor, you really don't know what that outcome is fully going to be. But I feel like I have to look at the world in a way because of my past and how far I've come. I feel like that I have to recognize the strength and the beauty behind those that are striving to be compassionate, those that are striving to hold up the goodwill of the society to help make it a better place. And that's how I feel like when I teach and when I do my job and I work as a nurse, that I provide that compassion and that well-being and what we should all strive to be.
Here we have Beth employing tact in the face of blatant attempts to inappropriately politicize attachment theory along the ideological lines of the radio host. The child psychopath has just shown more decorum and polished manners than a radio presenter.
Breaking barriers is, I believe, that we need to practice. Breaking barriers of selfish self-defeat. It's those barriers that we need to break to bring into an awareness. Let's take a caller. We have a caller in Beth. This caller is Cindy calling in from Colorado. Cindy, are you there?
Hi, yeah, this is Nancy from Colorado.
Nancy, go ahead, Nancy.
Hi, I was just wondering what Beth would recommend that parents do to help their child when they have RAD.
I feel like it's very important that a family that has a child with reactive attachment disorder, that they definitely find someone, a therapist specifically, that specializes in attachment disorder to work with their family and with their child, and that they actually provide that consistency in their home and in consistency in school, that they help that child to have that external control so that therefore they can learn to have internal control. But it's very important that they definitely get the help that they need from someone who is an expert in attachment disorder.
Well, if they got their heart broken from not enough love, can the parents just love them and then they'll get better?
Definitely not. Sadly, love is not enough for a child with attachment disorder. I was definitely loved till I was as much love as possible could have been given to me. And that was something that sadly did not do the trick. Until I was able to have that empathy and be able to connect myself, there was no way to have that reciprocation.
So you couldn't take in the love even though your mom loved you a lot?
Correct.
Let's not make the mistake of thinking that parents can't help their children who have attachment issues. That's certainly not the case. Research shows that parents have a greater potential to help their children than any therapist could possibly have. For the primary caregiver relationship has the most potential. Yet certain knowledge in that relationship is important to understand, such as comforting a child whenever it's in distress, quick response times, letting a child lead in play, sensitive and cooperative caregiving, and not violating child-parent boundaries.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yes.
The teaching that you do you work one-on-one with any children with RADs at all?
No, I'm not as much anymore. What I do is that I do more just teaching to parents and families and share my story. And I used to, years ago, I used to do respite with some children and work with some children one-on-one. I don't as much anymore, just because I've kind of gotten out of it and gotten more into the nursing field for sure. So I kind of guide more the families to do it, I guess you could say, more the moms to be able to do it.
Okay. I feel like that it's your destiny to be a healer. Do you feel that you were destined to heal and bring awareness, share experiences, send out messages, help people and direct their choices in their lives better in order to become aware of these conditions and such forth?
You know, as I was growing up and having this inability to love and then learning to love because I had those people in my life that helped me to learn to love and learn to have empathy. For many years, I always felt abandoned in a way, and that I always wondered why God had abandoned me is kind of how I felt. And I felt like I was on my own. And then as I started to heal, and as I started to, my heart started to grow, and I had compassion, and then I started to teach and share my story, it became very obvious to me that I might not truly understand why I went through what I went through, but there is a reason. And if my story can help someone to remain strong, to help their child, to help them find the help that they need, and to help someone to recognize that they have an attachment disorder or attachment issues and want to heal and break that cycle of abuse and break that cycle of pain, then I feel like I have found, I guess, my purpose in its way. I'm honored that you say that I am a healer, but I feel that my hands are guided, I guess, by God, because I feel that what I've become and who I have become is, I just want people to recognize that there is hope in a world that has somewhat forgotten. There is hope. There is hope.
Yeah. Speaking of God, I have a question came in from Mike from California, and he's asking, from where does Beth's sense of ethics arise? Are they religious or philosophical?
I would say there's probably both, and definitely I feel that God was very important in my healing. However, if you've watched Child of Rage, you recognize that my first adoptive family, he was a minister, and because God was his number one love, and because God is seen as pure love, I pushed God away in many ways, in pure, the complete opposite way of, to the point of, I felt that I was like from the devil to that extreme. And as I started to heal, I do feel that God became very much a part of me, and that, that desire for pure love was very important to me. And then there's also that the stages of internalization too. There's a whole stage of internalization by Dr. Foster Klein, which talks about the actual conscience development that is brought about. And as I internalized my mom, that my therapeutic mom, she was my therapeutic foster mom at the time, and then became my second adoptive mom when my first adoption failed, I internalized her morals and her ethics as well. And she's a very strong Christian. So yes, that was very much a part of my life. And then as I have continued to grow and to heal, I do feel that ethical, then that moral obligation is huge for me. And it's to the point where it's important to me as well. It's not that I am just guided by my mom or guided by God. It's what has been internalized in myself, that I would not be okay with myself if I were to hurt someone, or if I were to say something demeaning or rude, or that hurts me. And I have a difficult, I couldn't do that to someone else because it would hurt them. And that would also hurt me.
Do you still have contact with those who helped you in your childhood when you went through the extensive therapy? And do you have any contact and still speak with them?
I definitely with my mom. So I have obviously with my adoptive mom. And the therapist that actually was in Child of Rage, he passed away in a plane accident when I was younger. So no. And those others that have, you know, helped me along the way in regards to my healing, I have kind of a limited contact over the years, here and there, different things, but the primary one being my mom. She and I are very close for sure. And I just got back in contact with my, my first adoptive family. I got back in contact with my first adoptive father.
Now Beth is talking about the minister and his wife from the original Child of Rage documentary.
And that has been very eye-opening to me as an adult to hear him and to hear the pain that he went through being a dad that was unable to help me be a happy, healthy child. He loved me as much as he could, and yet all I did was push it away, and I pushed it away because I was so afraid that he was going to hurt me. He was going to hurt me physically. He was going to hurt me sexually, that they would leave me, I would be rejected. I was so afraid that I never allowed myself to take in the love that he gave me. And so to be able to reconnect with him as an adult and to recognize his side of the story at the point that, gosh, I'm the age, close to the age that he was at the time when I was in his home, and how eye-opening that was to me, and how I never quite understood because I was so wrapped up in my own trauma and pain and pushing away anyone that tried to help me and to heal.
How about fear and anxiety for you right now? Do you have anxiety, any panic attacks? Do you feel fear? Like, does it control your life?
No, it doesn't control my life. When I teach and I share my story, just even now, does it make me a little anxious, to be 100% honest? Yes, it does. I'm sharing a part of my soul, basically, to everyone. And there's always that fear of, I guess, rejection, even though it's my life that I'm sharing. I still fear that someone is going to reject that how hard I've worked and not understand that. Does it cause me to have problems in my life? No. For sure, it does not. I thankfully, I have a wonderful support base. I have a wonderful husband and a wonderful mom and dad and friends. And I actually, as I was healing, I established a friendship early on when I was in second grade, actually. And she has been my best friend for many, many years. And so I have a great support system.
Attachment research has shown that having a support network is of immense significance to a mother and her child. It can even outweigh factors of being a single mother, which have been shown to increase the risk of insecure attachment in children. We're not talking about all of the factors of being a single mother being overcome by a support network. That's ridiculous. The different genders of the mum and the dad play a significant role in the child becoming a healthy, well-rounded individual. But research clearly shows that when a mother and her partner separate, the mother's quality of care towards her child diminishes significantly and thus has consequences on their attachment relationship. Yet a support network can relieve the stress and strain of the mother so that the quality of care factor is mitigated. That means there's a good enough support network for the mother not to feel overly stressed and maintain a high quality of care for her child. The research proves that quality of care is a most important aspect in developing secure attachment styles. In this way, a support network enables people to treat those around them appropriately by keeping unresolved issues from anxieties and stresses from intruding into relationships.
So if I have any concern or any problems, then thankfully I have them to be able to talk to and share that with, but it's not debilitating by any means.
You're a profound nurse now. You're activating. You receive awards, Nurse of the Year. That's
yeah.
Remarkable. Tell us
Thank
about
you.
That.
Thank you. I was so honored by that. It was in 2010, and I was nominated by one of my coworkers as for 2 years in a row. She actually nominated me in 2009, and then in 2010, I was accepted as the winner, I guess you could say, for Nurse of the Year in the Southwest region. And I was amazed at how that was phenomenal to me. I was so honored, because when you work in a neonatal ICU, everyone gives every part of themselves. And I am surrounded by amazing men and women who work so hard to save lives every day and to make an impact and to touch someone in a positive and beautiful way. And for someone to recognize me in a group of such phenomenal people, I almost did not feel worthy, because I am with such an amazing group of people, and they are a big part of the nurse that I became. They guided me into whom I became. And so it was just an honor to be a recipient of that award. And because I love what I do, I felt like I was being honored for just doing my daily job. And I felt like, gosh, that was so easy, because this is what I love to do, and this is what I do. So, thank you. It was a great award to receive.
Honestly, I can say that I don't feel a child of rage in you whatsoever. I feel a woman with love and wisdom and understanding and compassion, and that is huge. And that is just so amazing. And the awareness that you have and the awareness that you share, that's healing. That is definite healing, and you cannot deny that. And the nurse role is healing. We need nurses all the time, and we can't have enough of them. But a nurse that loves what she does is priceless. And you do. You are so worthy of the awards. The awards that you have attained. Your family must be proud of you. Your friends must be proud of you. You must be proud of you.
It was definitely an honor. It very much an honor, and I was grateful to even be nominated for one by a friend, and then for someone else to choose that was humbling and just amazing. And like I said, to be honored for doing something I love, gosh, that just makes it easy.
Have you written any books?
Yes, I co-authored a book with my mom and my sister, and it's called Dandelion on My Pillow, Butcher Knife Beneath. And my own autobiography is within it. It was, I wrote it when I was 19. So it's been about 11, 12 years now. I'm now 32. So I wrote it then. And then my mom's story and how she got into working with the children, and then several other stories of the children that were in our home, and the stories of their pain and trauma, but their overcoming and their healing are also within it. It's definitely not a bedtime story by any means. It's very eye-opening, but it helps. I feel like after you read it, it helps someone to understand attachment disorder, but broken down in everyday life.
It's unfortunate that we're coming to the end of our show tonight. Before we wrap it up, is there any messages that you would like to send forth to anybody who might be experiencing any unfortunate ills with somebody who has RAD, RADS? Anything that you want to express to anybody? To give them any inspiration, now is the time.
The biggest thing that I would like to say is that there is hope. It's a very difficult journey for sure to open your home to an abused child and to want to love them and nurture them back is awe-inspiring to me. And when that child rejects that love and throws it back in your face, and abuses those people around him and her and doesn't want to take that love in, it becomes very devastating. And so I just hope that my story can help give that parent hope that their child can make it. I recommend our website, attachment.org. It has resources and links to recommended parent recommended therapists that specialize in attachment disorder, as well as more resources regarding attachment disorder. And the biggest thing is just being able to find that therapist and that is able to work with a child that actually recognizes attachment disorder, because it's different. For sure.
Unfortunately, we are now at an end, Beth, but I can't thank you enough for spending this hour with me. It was a great experience for me. I hope it was for you as well. I wish you luck. Continue on your path. We need more people like you in the world.
So there we have it. Beth, in 2015, at the age of 32, and a well-rounded individual.